It's VIP of the Month Spotlight, returning again for August 2019. Here is your host, Teresa Rose.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like a breeze. Country roads, take me home.
Welcome, everyone, to this month's VIP Spotlight with our own Theron Mullins. He was born July 25th, 1955, and he lives in Bartley, West Virginia. Welcome, Theron, and congratulations on being this month's VIP.
Thank you, ma'am. Glad to be here.
All right, Theron, we're going to get started. Tell us a little bit about where you were born and where you were raised.
I was born outside of a little town called Yeager, West Virginia, which is about 7 miles from here, on top of a mountain called High Knob, in a one-room shack.
Now that sounds like a Dolly Parton country song. Were you raised there? Did you live there most of your life?
I did. I was born at home. I wasn't born in the hospital. And I did. I lived there until I was 15 years old. And then when I was 15 years old, I went to the School for the Blind.
All right, Theron, tell us a little bit about your parents and any siblings.
Well, I got 8 brothers and sisters, 4 brothers and 4 sisters. My father, he's passed away. My mother still lives where I was raised. She's 88 years old this year.
Well, bless her heart. What did your father do for a living, Theron?
Not a whole lot. He was pretty much an alcoholic, was his profession.
No, I'm sorry to hear that. Tell us a little bit about what your childhood was like growing up.
Well, we were real poor. We was like Dolly Parton. When I was probably 2 years old or something, we moved into a 3-room house. And we didn't have running water or bathroom or anything, in fact, until I left home. So we was pretty much in stark poverty when I was real little growing up. And I don't know, you know, we lived in the country, so we didn't do a whole lot.
That's when kids learned to play games outside and keep themselves occupied, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would go in the woods and stay in there for hours at a time. One thing that happened to me was when I was 6 years old, where I lived, we had one-room schools, grade schools. Then when you got to the 7th grade, then you had to figure out how to get off to the nearest high school, which was off the mountain. I was about 6, and they wouldn't let me stay in because they figured out I couldn't see. So I didn't go, they made me quit, and then I didn't go back until I went to the School for the Blind.
And that leads me up to my next question. Were you born blind, Theron, or did you go blind later in life? And what is the cause for your vision impairment?
Yeah, I was born with congenital cataracts. I wasn't totally blind. I'm legally blind now. I have no vision in my left eye, and I'm legally blind in my right eye. When I was born, I had better vision, but then I went through a bunch of surgeries with this eye specialist to try to correct the eyes and ended up worse than I was when we started.
And how old were you when you had your first surgery?
I was about around eight years old, I'd say. It was actually back at that time, they didn't do cataract surgery like they do now. They used a scalpel to take the cataracts off. They put you to sleep with ether. And I had 6 surgeries over like 2 years.
And so how much did that improve your sight? At the age of 8, would you consider that your sight was very good, excellent, or poor?
Well, it actually didn't improve it. It actually got, when I was little, the left eye was better than the right. I had vision in that eye. After one of those surgeries, I fell and punctured the eye or let the amniotic fluid drained out of my eye, and that eye went out. So I actually ended up with way less after the surgeries than what I had before.
Oh, wow. You hear that a lot with people that have vision problems. They have cataract surgery to improve it, and then it really affects their vision. And it leads me to my next question. So were you mainstream schooled at any time, elementary school? And if so, what grades? And you've already mentioned the School for the Blind. When did you go to the School for the Blind, and what School for the Blind and where?
I went to the West Virginia School for the Blind in Romney, and I actually didn't go to school until I was 15. And so before that, when I was about 13 and a half, somewhere around in there, the principal from the School for the Blind, and he had a science teacher that drove him around, came to our house and started talking about the school, and about a year and a half later, I was enrolled there.
So what grade did you start out? And let me ask, since you had not attended school until then, were you taught at home to read and write?
No, I wasn't in any grade. They put me in spatial ed, and I spent 3 years in spatial ed at the School for the Blind there, which I got into a lot of other stuff. I got into the wrestling team and a whole bunch of other stuff. And then after the 3 years, they wanted to give me essentially a fake diploma. It was kind of a thing they were doing at the time to make developmentally disabled people feel better when they weren't going to graduate. And so when they made that offer, I declined, and I left the school. And then 3 months later, after the end of the year, I moved back to Romney, and I went to the regular Hampshire County Vocational School and got my GED.
Oh, wow. That's something I'm sure an accomplishment that you are very proud of. And I pat you on the back for not accepting a fake diploma and give you kudos for going out and getting the real thing. So what activities did you do in the School for the Blind while you were there? And do you feel like it was that it actually helped you in the long run?
Yeah, it did socially. Yeah, it didn't really so much academically, but it definitely did socially. First year I was there, we went to the White House, and we went to the Smithsonian Museum. I was on the wrestling team. I was in corps, so we traveled on both of those. We traveled around. And for me, I grew up in the mountains. When I was a kid, I didn't go nowhere. I stayed home most of the time. So all that was revolutionary to me at the time.
So what about your teen year? Since you started school so late and you were starting in the School for the Blind in special classes, how would you describe your teen years?
I guess, I fell in love with all those. I fell in love. That was part of it. And then I fell in love with all those things like the wrestling and all of it. And so for me, it was killer. Academically, they didn't. The person that was my teacher, she was new. She started the same year I did. And in fact, I think she left the year I did. And so I don't really think she was really a great teacher. But like I say, all the other stuff I loved. I was in woodshop. I loved that. I was in I learned how to cane chairs. I took piano tuning.
And what about, you said you were in the chorus, and did you learn to play any musical instruments while you were in the School for the Blind?
Nah, I wasn't worth a hoot at. I tried to play the baritone. I played, you know, I got to where I could play a few notes on it. But I wasn't in the band. I never did make the band. I wasn't good enough to be in. I was in chorus, though. I was all right in there. I was a bass in chorus.
Okay, and we'll move on a little bit. So after you left the School for the Blind and you came back and went into a voc rehab and got your GED, did you have any other extended education, technical school, or any college courses or anything after that, Farron?
I just came back and went. I didn't actually go through rehab. I just came back and went to the Hampshire County Vocational School, you know, just the regular high school. They had this vocational part of it, and they'd let people take classes at night to get their GED. So I went back and done it that way. Then a few years later, yes, I took the ACT college entrance exam and enrolled in West Virginia State College. And I was there for about a semester. I think I got 6 hours credit.
Was that just not your cup of tea, Farron, or what?
At that time, I was with the rehab counselor, and she insisted that I needed to take a science field. I took computer science, and it just was the last thing I should have ever attempted to do, even though I passed some of the computer classes. But they had a class called Logic and Flow Charting, and it was like a lab class, and you had to have it. It was a prerequisite for the degree that I had picked. Well, the professor that was teaching the class, the whole class was lab. And I went to him, and I said, you know, can you give me notes so that I can follow along, because I can't see what you're doing. And he wouldn't cooperate. He said, no. He said, you really shouldn't be in this class. Just really try to run me out of the class. And I said, well, the class is a prerequisite, so... Anyway, I got behind on that class, and I could see I wasn't going to be able to pass the course because I wasn't going to get through this class. And so I finished my English and, you know, the other courses I was taking for that semester, and then after that I left and went and got a job.
And that leads me up to my next question. After that, Farron, what career or where did you go to work? Did you pick a career? Did you have a job? Tell us a little bit about that time in your life.
Well, after I left the School for the Blind, I come back to Romney. I got a job with the city. Painting signs and just doing different jobs with the city. I worked in the water plant, different stuff like that. I did that for a little while, and then I met a librarian at the School for the Blind and fell in love with her, and we got married. Well, she was staff. At this point, I'm an ex-student at the school, and she's current staff. We got married, and then we eventually left Romney, and she went back to the University of Kentucky to get her degree, and I went to work in Kentucky.
Okay, so tell us about where you went to work in Kentucky. What did you do in Kentucky at that time?
Well, the first job I got was washing dishes at this real big, huge place at night. It was the worst job I ever had in my life. They had this place. It was like a big, fancy restaurant, and then they had an all-night restaurant. It was the hardest job I think I ever had. I mean, you had dishes piled up around you, up to your head, and crates and stuff. And then I worked there about 3 or 4 months, and I'm in there working one night, and this guy walks in, and he's got a cowboy hat on, and he said, I'm looking for people to work on a horse farm. Anybody here want a job? This was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and I said, yeah, I do.
Okay, so I'm assuming, tell us, did you go to work on the horse farm?
Yeah, I did. I went to work. I worked there about 6 months until my wife got through with her master's degree. It was a big fancy place. They had a plantation. They had a old Civil War plantation home on it. And the guy that owned it was rich, and they were all racing horses, thoroughbred racing horses. And I worked there for about 6 months, and when she finished her degree, we moved.
Okay, and after that, and you moved, where did you move to then, and what job or career did you pursue at that time?
We moved to Charleston, West Virginia, and my wife was a librarian at the University of Charleston, and then she worked at West Virginia State, my wife at that time. And around that time, well, I got a job working in a hotel as a hotel bellman.
Now, I can see you in a bellhop's uniform. I bet you made some good tips.
I made some good money. In the summertime, it was wonderful. And yeah, I had a little tux with the bow tie and the patent leather shoes and the little jacket, the whole thing.
I can see you, Fair, and I can just picture you, your little country pumpkin all decked out in this bellhop suit. I can imagine you really be getting tips, and I bet your patrons loved you.
It was a really hard job because they expected you to know who people was, and I couldn't see, I wasn't able to actually do that. And so I had to develop some techniques on how to. But it was a really interesting job. At that time, it was a premier hotel, and they got a lot of famous singers and writers, and you know, a lot of people like that would come there.
Wow, already we've learned some interesting things about you. You've already had an exciting life, and we haven't even gotten to the good part, folks. Farron, tell me and the others, what is one of the most embarrassing moments in your life that you can recall?
That's a hard one, but the one that comes to mind, and it was very embarrassing, was when I was married to my first wife. She gave me a tape recorder. At that time, it was one of these little micro tape recorders, and when you spoke, it would come on. She gave it to me to use, and I was running a snack bar at the time. She gave it to use in the snack bar. Well, one day there was a girl that was delivering donuts to us, and she was a beautiful girl. I mean, just absolutely beautiful. And I'm standing behind the counter, and she comes in to deliver the donuts, and as she's going out, I make a remark about how nothing bad, just, you know, that she's a really beautiful girl and how cute she is. Well, then everything went along. I didn't think anything about that. And about 3 months later, 4 months later, my wife asked to borrow my tape recorder because she was going to do something with it. And so I let her borrow it, and then she came in to me after she borrowed it, and she said, "What was this about? You thought she was such a..." Started quoting this conversation to me, and I didn't remember that I'd even said that. So I was busted.
Well, we're not going to go into details, or we don't want details, but that might have been the downslide to the end of that marriage, Farron.
Well, you know, me and the girl, we weren't doing anything. We weren't talking that way to each other or anything. And I was trying to explain it to her. You know, look, this is, you know, I'm not having anything to do with this lady. I'm not doing anything. I just made this comment, but it was the way it came out, I guess, on the tape and everything. So I was embarrassed.
Oh, how cute! I bet so. Farron, speaking about relationships, tell us how old you were when you got your first kiss, and tell us if you remember her name and where you were at.
Yeah, I was 15 years old, and it was at the School for the Blind. I fell madly in love with the girl there.
So I'm sure you remember her name. What was her name, Farron?
Her name was Peggy Jenkins.
Farron and Peggy. Doesn't have a good ring like Farron and Holly.
Shoot, I always tell people I've been married all my life. Which me and her never ended up married. She run off on me with another feller.
And it brings us up to your current wife, Holly. We've all heard you speak about your wife, and we know that you're devoted to her and love her dearly. How long have you and Holly been together, and how did you meet your wife?
We've been together 28 years, and the way I met her was my brother was married to her sister at the time.
That's keeping it all in the family. Congratulations.
Well, we got married and they got divorced.
Well, maybe the family split. What can I say?
Yeah, that's what happened. We got married, and about 3-4 years after we got married, they got divorced. But we stuck in there.
All right, Fair, let's move on further into your life going a little deeper into your career path. We know that you were in the Vinden program. Tell us how you came into that and how long you were in that. And how did you view that as a career for your life?
Well, when I got into it, I viewed it as a good opportunity. It really wasn't. And I started out in Charleston, West Virginia, working in Charleston City Hall. I had a little location that you couldn't close it because it was in between two sections of the building and didn't have doors. And so I had to put all my stuff away every day under the counter, and then in the morning I would take everything out, my hot dogger and the whole thing, and set it all up. It's like a gypsy operation.
Okay, and where did you move from there? And tell us a little bit about where that vending program career went, and tell us a little bit about when it ended.
I wanted to go into cafeterias when I got in. That was my goal. So when you get into the vending programs, you're in a bid system. So you usually don't have anything really good when you first start out. You have to start with something really small, whatever's left over. And a lot of times these states will have stuff that really don't make that much money. And it's the only thing you have to choose to bid on. So after I had stayed at City Hall, I couldn't make a lot of money there. I bid on a location at the Capitol, West Virginia's Capitol. Went to work for the agency, and I think I was making $6 a month as a vendor. And then after that, I went to Beckley, West Virginia, and got into a big cafeteria and went to work and trained under another cafeteria manager. And it was the real thing. It was a big cafeteria.
Okay, and tell us more about that, because I am not familiar. I am familiar with the vending program, but not that familiar about how hard it is to get in and how you bid. So how did it pursue once you got the bigger, we'll say the bigger part of the apple when you got the cafeteria?
Well, when I was working for him, I didn't have it. I was working as a salaried employee for him, and so I didn't get but I was training there. And then I left there and came back to Charleston and went to work at West Virginia's rehab center and ran a location for them there. I ran about 3 locations up here. Ran a location in there, and then they opened up a restaurant and kind of in competition with me and killed my business, so I couldn't make money there. So then I left West Virginia, went to North Carolina, and got into their vending program.
And we talked a little bit about that, and you were down in the Charlotte area. Tell us a little bit about that part of your vending career.
Well, when I went to Charlotte, I didn't have no referrals or anything, so I went down to Charlotte and got a job with a blind vendor who had a location in a huge postal facility. They had 1,600 employees. I went to work for him. I went down there, and 2 days later, I went to work for him on a night shift cook, and cooked, and got an apartment there, worked for him probably about 80 hours a week, and then did the training on the side to train into the program, took my training, and worked for him about a year, and got a location in a little town called Albemarle, North Carolina.
I know exactly where Albemarle is, and there is a music store there in Albemarle that has a train museum upstairs, which is phenomenal. If you're a train buff, they've got all the way back to the very first line of trains that ever came back. So tell us a little bit about where were you at in your last years of vending, and where were you located, Farron?
I worked 3 or 4 years at Albemarle and opened up a catering business and everything. Unfortunately, me and my first wife, that was around the time we got divorced, and so I decided to leave and went down and worked in another cafeteria, ran it for them, and then I came back to West Virginia, and that's when I got the location at the academy.
Okay, so was that the last location you had before you left the vending program, Farron? And if so, tell us a little bit about that, and tell us what you'd like to tell us about how that ended for you.
The academy, I stayed there 7 years, and it was they had a lot of corruption going on. They had a union that was corrupt there, and the people running the agency were corrupt. So I stuck with it, but they pulled out of the academy, the agency did. And when they pulled out, I just lost my job. I mean, that was it, me and my wife both. We had bought a home in Beckley, and when they pulled out, they called me at home and announced that they were pulling out and that somebody else had got the contract, and we were out of jobs just like that. And so I filed a grievance against them because the whole thing was illegal. And while that was going on, about a year into it, after we had lost our home and everything we had, then Alderson Federal Prison for Women came up and forbid. And so I bid on it because I didn't have anything. And I went to work at Alderson Federal Prison, took a contract down there for vending, and I worked there for about 6 years.
And when did you leave your career, Farron? How long have you been out of the vending?
I left in 2009. And when I took the federal prison, the only reason they wanted to give the federal prison to the agency was because Martha Stewart was going to be interned there for 5.5 months, and they wanted the vending and everything built up to look good for the public that was coming in there.
Well, you have had some, you've told some interesting stories, and you've had an interesting career moving around. I know it's very hard in the vending program to get good places because you bid on them, and the ones that are higher up in the vending program, I've always heard the longer you've been in it, the better location you get. And so it sounds like you had an interesting career in it. Do you miss that, Farron?
Well, there's just too much of it to be able to cover it all. A huge part of the vending program was I was an advocate. I was on the Blind Vendors Committee. I was on the Blind Vendors Committee in both states. I was a member of the American Council of the Blind, and I was on ad hoc committees. So at the time when all this stuff was happening, there was a lot of revenge going on because we were finding stuff and filing grievances as a committee. So what I'm trying to say by this is a lot of my career was as an activist, and that cost me.
And that's sad, but I admire you for sticking to your guns, and that takes a lot of guts, Farron, and I admire you for that.
Well, it wasn't just me. Most of my friends, Gadget, the person that some folks on here know, he was in the same deal with me, and his deal was the same thing. And I had some other good friends that also got done really dirty there, so it was kind of a thing for most of the blind vendors that were around at that time.
Well, tell me, I'm curious, and just curiosity running away here. The vending program used to be the top of the line program that everybody wanted to get into. when I first lost my sight and went through rehab. I mean, all you heard about was, you know, get into vending. Is vending, the vending program, that popular now? Are there that many contracts out there open for the blind community?
I don't think so. I think a lot of blind people realize about blind politics that are involved in the vending program, and so they don't choose to go there in the first place. The thing about the vending programs is they're so political. Like, for example, every building has a building manager, and those building managers resent the heck out of this Randolph-Shepard law. And so you go into these places as a vendor trying to do a good job, but if you don't do every little thing these building managers want, then they'll make your life terrible. So they just resent the fact that they have to let you in, that they just can't pick a vendor if they want, or if they ain't getting a kickback. So there's the first part of it. And the second part of it is that the way the bidding system works, it takes forever for a vendor to get a good location unless they just get lucky. And so I just think that in the end, it's a terrible, you know, because blind people get caught up in the politics. If, like in my case, when I went to the academy, they weren't mad at me. They were mad at the agency because they had run the place in the ground before I got there. Well, I was there 7 years, and I kept a 98 health score the whole time I was there. Never had any complaints, never had anything filed against me. But by the time I came, they were so resentful toward the Society for the Blind that I was in the middle of the battle. So I go to the director there and say, hey, this doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm here to do a good job. We want to have run an excellent cafeteria for you guys. And he said, well, it doesn't matter to me. You work for them. And because you work for them, you're all going to be out.
And as it always is in politics, it's them against us or you against me. And it's sad. And that's everywhere. And I'm really sad for that.
In the end, at Alderson, they started the same thing. I had been working there. I couldn't get any help from them. When I went there to start with, they wouldn't help me buy a truck or anything to get me started. And you got these businesses, and you know, you're on a route. You got to have a vehicle to do the route with. So I bought an old church van that had about 200,000 miles on it and was using it for a while until I could finally get enough money to get a truck. But it was like, They would do stuff to people, you know, to try to keep you from succeeding.
And that's sad. And you've really enlightened us. And I'm sure that some will probably have questions because you have really enlightened my knowledge about the vending program. And because I was not aware of just little bits of how it works. So you've really opened my eyes about it, Farron. Let's move on a little bit. And I want to know, what would you say is the most difficult challenge that you've met in your life because of your blindness?
I'd probably say running that cafeteria. It was, we had a labor union that we were responsible for. We had to take care of all the different aspects of it. I had 20 employees, and they were all union employees. I had, like, certified chefs. I had dietitians. It was probably the hardest challenge I ever took on.
Farron, I understand that you have, as Mr. Franklin would say, critters. Tell us about your critters.
Well, we got a pit bull, Dalmatian combination. Her name is Harley Davison. And we got a heathen named Romano. He's a Shih Tzu family or one of them kind of dogs, or a Benji dog. And then we got a new cat, kitten, named Lala, of all things.
I gotta ask, who came up with the name Lala?
Miss Holly Pooh. Its actual name is Lola, but we call it Lala.
Oh, how cute. And my next question is, Farron, if you could go anywhere in the world, where would it be? A place that you've always dreamed about. Where would it be and why?
like go live there?
No. Well, it could be if you wanted to go live there or visit someplace you've always dreamed about visiting or going to live, your choice.
Well, I always wanted to go to Hawaii.
Me too. So, Els and I and you and Holly can go. What do you say?
Sounds like a plan to me. After I get that next job.
All right, Theron, we all know that you are a wonderful harmonica player and a great musician. Tell us a little bit about when you learned to play, if you play any other instruments, and tell us a little bit about that part of your life.
I can't play anything else, and I started playing probably around 20. I was married, right? I must have been a little later than that because I remember I made my ex-wife take me through a snowstorm to go get my first harmonica.
And I believe you also play with a band or a group that you get together with. I've heard some of your music. Is that family or friends that you play with?
Yes, I had a first cousin. His name was Jeff Powell. And me and him probably did probably 60 recordings. We both set us up a little portable studio. And I had moved out to Illinois, a little town called Stronghurst, Illinois, where he lives, so we could continue recording and playing music. And about 6 months after I moved out there, he had a massive heart attack and passed away.
Oh, I am so sorry, Farron. I'm sorry for that loss. Have you ever played in any of your local clubs or in church or anything like that?
No, ma'am. I never played professionally. Me and him played. We never did play. We played in front of family. And then I've played around here, you know, at some, like, guys that's had some gathering type things, but I've never played professionally or anything.
Well, I've heard lots of your music, and you can sure tear that harmonica up, I can tell you.
When I started playing a harmonica, I love music. I'm a music freak. And it was around the era when Bob Dylan and Tom Petty, Neil Young, all those guys, and they were all playing harmonicas in their stuff. And so I started playing with them, and that's what really got me into it.
So did you have any lessons, or you just picked it up on your own and taught yourself to play?
Yeah, just picked it up on my own, taught myself to play. I started out with one harmonica, and I was always interested in them, and, you know, I finally got to where I had a set, and then I got a better set, and just kept messing with it over the years. And I got brothers that play guitars and mandolin. I got one brother who plays a fiddle a little bit, so it's a family thing, usually, too. We play, you know, all of us get together. We used to. We ain't done it much lately.
Well, I bet you've had some wild and musical family reunions over the years.
Yeah, usually when we have one, it's usually my brothers. And I got some people on my mom's side that are pros. Jeff, the guy that I played with, he was my first cousin. He was my mom's sister's son. And he was a pro. He was, all his family actually, he's got a brother that plays real good, and his father plays real good. They play banjos and mandolins and a lot of bluegrass stuff.
Well, I love the sound of a harmonica, and I just think it's awesome that you play. I think that's a definitely, if you're self-taught, that's a God-given talent to you, and you do it really well. I've one time played a play harmonica. I couldn't even make any sound come out of it. So you just do wonderful with it, Farron, and I just love your playing.
Well, funny thing about the harmonica, when I was younger, my nephews and nieces, you know, kids, if they see you with harmonicas, they go crazy on them. And I would, every once in a while, one of my nephews or nieces would, you know, they'd go crazy when they was little kids, and I'd give them the harmonica, and I think their parents wanted to kill me afterward.
Probably so. Theron, if you could change one thing in your life, what would it be and why?
I guess I don't really think I would do it. I wouldn't change anything. I guess I kind of believe that your life is your destiny, and it's kind of foolish to want to change things.
Good answer. A good outlook as well, Theron. Well, I hear through little birds here and there that you have a love for cooking and that you do it very well. As a matter of fact, I heard what you fixed for dinner before the interview started. Tell us how much you enjoy cooking. And then after that, Theron, we're all coming over to dinner. So tell us what you're going to have prepare for us to eat when we get there.
Well, here's the thing. I really ain't all that crazy about cooking, but I'm the cook, and so I don't have much choice. Well, Holly likes it pretty good, so it must be all right.
All right, we're coming over to dinner. What are you going to cook us?
We'll have them filet mignons. When I was at the academy, I don't know if you know who Secretary Chow is. She's the secretary of something now. I can't think of what she is. Well, she was the Secretary of Labor when I was at the academy, and we did a dinner for her and Senator Byrd. They came out there for an event, and we did a dinner for them, and we fed them filet mignons and fresh trout.
Oh, yummy. All right, guys and gals, we're going to have filet mignon and fresh trout after the interview.
Or lobster, either one. The lobster's pretty good.
Theron, tell us, who has made the biggest impression on your life and why?
That's a hard question, but I would say probably my mother. And the reason is because she had all the odds against her, an alcoholic husband, and 9 children, and she still managed to instill what right from wrong in all of us, and we all turned out real good, and even though the odds were against her, she still managed to get right on through it.
And if I was a betting lady, I would say that she's probably a Christian and faithful in her worship to the God, to the Lord.
Yeah, she is.
All right, Theron, tell us about any other hobbies. We know you like music, and even though you say you don't like cooking, we know you cook. What other hobbies does Theron like to do?
One of my big hobbies that I like is cameras, and I'm a partial, and thank goodness for Nikon. I have a Nikon 5000 that does everything but take the picture. All you got to do is aim it, basically. And when you focus it, it beeps. So then you know to take the picture.
So what do you like to photograph? Do you have anything particular that you like to photograph? And if so, do you ever enter any of your photography into any competition?
Holly's actually the professional. She does. She's got some killer stuff. I do pretty good. I don't enter mine. She belongs to some clubs. Holly does. But I don't really belong to clubs or anything. But I do like to take... We got... on my camera, I got what's called a macro setting, where you can take pictures of, like, butterflies or birds or insects. So I like to take pictures of... This summer, it's been birds and butterflies. Butterflies are really hard to get. I've took pictures of hummingbirds. I got a 300 millimeter zoom lens, and so I sit around and sneak around someplace where they can't see me. One time we had bird feeders, and when the birds would come down for the bird feeders, I would stand behind a curtain with that macro lens and take pictures of them, and then I put them on Facebook.
How interesting. What about any other hobbies? We know, of course, music is one of your hobbies. Any other hobbies?
Not a whole lot. I can't really afford any more hobbies. There's all kinds of stuff I'd probably like to do, and I just can't afford it.
And that brings me to my next question. If you won the lottery today, what would be the first thing you would do?
I would rent an island and go straight there.
Rent or buy?
Well, I'd probably rent it to start with, because you know if you won the lottery, every person you ever knew would be trying to call you immediately, so you'd have to run away and hide somewhere for a little while.
Oh, that is so cute, Farron. That was an adorable answer and made me smile. Farron, this has been such a wonderful interview. Before I ask my last question, I want to ask you, is there anything that we have not covered in the interview that you would like to share with all of us?
I'm too old and too much history to go any farther.
I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be the VIP of the month for the month of August. And this has been a very interesting interview, and I have learned so much about you. My last question of the evening before we open up the floor to the VIP members is, how long have you been part of VIP, and how has VIP impacted your life?
Let's see. I would say about 4 years, and then I was on once before, a few years before that, and then was gone for a while. I lost my internet for a year or two. And then I was at Four of the People for a little while, but I never stayed with them too long. So VIP is probably about 4 years now. And it's made a big impact on my life because I've met some really neat people, and that's a pretty cool deal.
Yep, we're just like a family. And Farron, thank you so much. Okay, guys and gals, I'm going to open up the floor for you to ask Farron any questions. And if you'll just key up one at a time, who wants to ask Farron their first question?
Hi, Farron. I never had the opportunity to talk to you before, but I'm very glad that I was able to catch this interview because you're such an interesting fellow. I'm so much impressed with all that you've been able to accomplish in life and so many things that you've done, considering how you started out. In high school, back when I was a kid in New York, we wrestled the Virginia School for the Blind on numerous occasions, and I think we lost more times than we won. Great interview. I do have one question for you about your harmonica playing. What kind of harmonica do you play? Do you play a marine band harmonica? And if so, what keys do you play in, and so on and so forth? Something about your harmonica of choice. Thank you.
I play, my harmonica of choice is a Seidel or a Settle, I guess is how you say it. It's a German-made harmonica. And then also Suzuki, the car maker, makes a phenomenal harmonica. And Fender makes a really good harmonica. I'm not a big fan of Marine Band or whatever that other one is that everybody plays.
I'm sorry, did you finish your question and answer? My next question, Farron, is I want to thank you for being my friend. I enjoy talking to you. We talk often. My one comment is I really wish you'd come and center stage more and play your harmonica because you know I think you're awesome.
Well, thank you, Connie. You're so sweet. Well, I appreciate that so much. And yeah, I'm trying to work up some new stuff and get back in there.
Hey, Farron, my friend. We've been knowing each other for a while now. And tonight was an excellent, excellent interview. And Teresa brought out some good stuff that I did not know about you. My question for you, my friend, is I know you cook, and you cook all these different dishes, and you share it with your neighbors. What is one of the best ones you cook that you love to share with your neighbors and your wife, of course? And keep on playing that good music, because I love every bit of it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'd probably say homemade spaghetti and meatballs is one of their favorites because they make me make it all the time. It takes me all day.
Hey, Farron, good interview. I I really enjoyed talking to you, man. I really don't have a question for you. I just want to say that you're one of my favorite people in the world, and I always smile when you come on, when we get to talking and stuff. But really good interview, and I just really enjoyed it.
Thank you, fella. I appreciate that a lot. And back at you. Same here.
Hey, Farron, I don't really have a question either. I just wanted to say it was a great interview. I enjoyed it very much, what I got to hear of it. And I'm also really happy with the happy to be. Thank you for being our friend. And I love the camaraderie that you share with Glenn. I like seeing him have men to hang out with. Men.
Oh, Farron, I also want to thank you for the interview. It's such an interesting person, and I really like it when you come on and chat and when you play for Center Stage. You just make us smile, and we really enjoy you. And so thank you again for giving your time and sharing your life with us.
Yeah, I would certainly like to second all of those comments. Farron, you're such a genuine person, and I thoroughly enjoyed getting to know you and really listening to your harmonica playing, and you're just a nice guy, and I'm glad you're part of VIP.
Farron, I've really was happy to get to know you this year, and I really enjoy your harmonica playing, and I love to go on Facebook and see those beautiful pictures of the butterflies. So God bless.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. So did you see the ones I just put on there, Miss Nan?
Yes, I did. And the detail, you just get everything about the butterfly. It's just amazing, these pictures. Thanks so much for posting them.
I'm glad you like them. Thank you very much, ma'am.
That's neat. You can take all those pictures like that. I enjoy your harmonica too. And did you get to see the woman in the prison? What's her name? Can't think of her name now, of course.
And she's asking if you got to see Martha Stewart while she was in prison, Farron.
Yes, I did. I worked with her almost on a daily basis, and she had some requests, that some stuff she wanted when she came there from my vending. She requested that I put yogurt in, which I did, in the visitor center. And she wanted me to start selling nectar. I didn't even know what nectar was. And it was like, it's like apple, but it's not juice. I guess it's nectar. So I got it. But then when I got it, they wouldn't let me put it in because it could be fermented and the inmates could turn it into hooch.
Oh, my word. Anybody else got a question for Farron? And Farron, I believe Rick had part of his question that you didn't answer. He asked what key you like to play when you play the harmonica, if you'd like to address that. And after that, if anyone else has a question for Farron.
I'm sorry, Rick. I have a set of harmonicas. It's got the majors and the flats. So it's got all the majors and all the flats. I like all keys. Yeah, the way it is with music is usually, you know, depends on what song you're doing and everything. So I play a lot in C and G and A, the major keys.
Have you ever played a chromatic harmonica? And I was wondering, I know it seemed like most professionals avoid them. I had one a number of years ago. I never did master it, but I was wondering if you were familiar with it. And I've also seen a double row harmonica. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Two rows, one on top of the other.
Yes, I have a couple of chromatics, and I have the other ones. They make two types, actually. They make the ones with two rows. They're kind of a chord harmonica, and then they make one that it's almost chords only harmonica. The Stevie Wonder, he's a big chromatic. He's a big chromatic. They're just hard to play. I mean, you know, you're jumping from you're jumping an octave when you're playing them. And some songs are killer because some songs, you know, they do jump an octave. So if you change an octave in a song and you're playing harmonica, if you're just playing a diatonic, which is the little 10-hole harmonicas, then you have to have two when you go to the jump. You have to have another harmonica. So if you're playing a chromatic and they jump into the one that you push down on, then you can play both of them.
And one final question on the harmonica deal. Are you familiar with these wah-wah harmonicas? A lot of times you hear them, especially when they're doing a Western movie or TV show, and you hear this wah-wah-wah type of a effect. Does that require a special harmonica, and have you played that type also?
No, it's a technique is what it is. I don't think they're using a special harmonica. It's just the way you bend notes and you can make them wobble. It's just the way you do it. It's an air thing.
Anyone else have a question for our VIP of the month?
Farron, I just wanted to say it was a really good interview. You have a fascinating life story, and I really enjoy getting to know you, and I look forward to more of that in the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Miss Tammy Lynn. And I got your Facebook, so I see you on Facebook, so it's great to see you there, and thank you very much.
One last final question. If not, we're going to close this out. Anybody? Again, Farron, thank you so much for agreeing to be my VIP of the month of August. You've led an interesting life. We've just skimmed probably the highlights of it, and I'm sure there's even more that we don't know about you, that as we spend time with you over the years to come, we'll learn more and more about you. I value your friendship and appreciate your friendship very much. And again, thank you so much. And ladies and gentlemen, if you will put September the 30th on your calendar, will be the next VIP Spotlight interview. And the VIP for the month of September will be our own Susie Barnes. So make sure you mark it on your calendar, September the 30th, 7 p.m. here in the Village Square. And Farron, this is for you, and we're going to end with this. This is our own Farron Mullins. Thank you.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.